My name is Dean Foulkes, and I'm the lead pastor here at LifePoint. We have been in a series for the last 4 weeks called Just Saying, where we've been looking at some of the tough stuff that Jesus said. The way that we have said that each week is that Jesus said things that are both troubling and true. Now, you got a listening guide whenever you came in. If you want to jot down some notes, that's the first thing there on the listening guide. Or if you want to take notes on our LifePoint app, you can do that as well as we go. What we've done every week with these difficult passages, I've kind of started by reading the text, and then we've kind of gone to what we call our experts. I hope you've enjoyed that, by the way. We have gone to our experts and asked them to explain the difficult passage to us. So this morning, I'm going to read to us from Matthew chapter 11, and then as soon as I'm done reading, you can watch the video screens and see what the scholars around here have to say about it. It says this, "Truly I say to you, among those born among women, there is arisen none greater than John the Baptist. Yet the one who is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. From the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven has suffered violence, and the violent take it by force. For all the prophets in the law prophesied until John, and if you are willing to accept it, he is Elijah who has come. He who has ears, let him hear. But to what shall I compare this generation? It is like the children sitting in the marketplaces and calling to their playmates, 'We played the flute for you and did not dance. We sang a dirge and you did not mourn.'"
But you did not dance. Maybe I don't want to dance.
Because they were tired.
Because they don't know how to dance.
They don't like dancing.
They may not be very good dancers.
We're embarrassed too.
Because probably it's not like a right instrument they like.
Well, it's because those are people that wanted to kill God.
Some people pray for God, but they don't listen to his prayer. Some people don't actually believe him.
Like a very, very, very sad song.
Low and slow.
Depressing.
Like a wedding music but humming.
Dun, 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 dun.
Okay, when I'm sad, I just can't play, can't talk, can't do and run, can't walk, can't talk. I just wanted to have some time alone, think about stuff.
Well done. Well, I think my favorite part of that one, other than the song at the end, was when they asked if you could sing a dirge, and the young girl went, duh. And I think she was doing the beginning of the wedding march. I don't know how she equated those two things together. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 11 that the kingdom of heaven suffers violence, and the violent take it by force. What in the world does that mean? What does it mean that we would never associate like Jesus and heaven and the kingdom and with violent means? Well, let's talk about what it doesn't mean first. First of all, it's obviously not talking about physical violence. You remember the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus gave. He said, listen, you've heard it said, you shall not murder. And I'll summarize a bunch of stuff that Jesus said into a short little phrase. Basically, what Jesus says is you can't even hold a grudge. Like resentment is off the table for you. So it's obviously he's not talking about physical violence. What is he talking about? I think that the context will help us. Jesus gives us the context in the past. Hey, you've heard about John the Baptist. You remember him. He was the voice of one crying in the wilderness, the forerunner of Jesus, the guy in the hairy shirt, right? Who stood out there in the wilderness and he cried and he called people to repentance. Now, John the Baptist, he was not physically violent, but he was ferocious. He was spiritually aggressive. He was intentional and intense about his spiritual life. So what I think Jesus is saying to us is that you cannot receive the kingdom of God into your life. You can't receive the love of God into your life and just kind of be as status quo. It can't just be kind of business as normal in your life if you've received the kingdom. So here's what we're going to do today. We're going to take the forerunner of Jesus, John the Baptist, that's what he was kind of known as, and we're going to lay his life up beside an Old Testament forerunner, a guy named Saul, the first king of Israel. Saul was kind of the forerunner of David. John the Baptist, he was the forerunner of the son of David, of Jesus. And I think what we're going to see in the contrast between the two is going to explain to us this spiritual ferocity that should be part of our lives as well. So if you want to turn back to the Old Testament, if you got a copy of the scriptures, turn back to 1 Samuel chapter 9, and we will get introduced to Saul as a young man. It says this in verse 1. There was a man of Benjamin, that's the tribe, whose name was Kish, a man of wealth. And he had a son whose name was Saul, a handsome young man. There was not a man among the people of Israel more handsome than he. From his shoulders upward, he was taller than any of the people. So Israel's been begging for a king, and finally God says, okay, I'm gonna send you a king. And he commissions the national prophet, Samuel. Samuel's kind of like the Billy Graham of Israel during that time. And he says, go out into the wilderness, set a banquet table, and I'm gonna send you the first king of Israel. Now, the guy that we're introduced to is Saul. Saul's head and shoulders taller than anybody else. He's young. The scriptures say that he's handsome, that he's a sharp-looking guy. And what you read in the rest of chapter 9, we just don't have the time to read it all, but is that Kish, his father, loses his donkeys and sends Saul to go get them. Now, whenever I study for messages, I study in various translations and read in different. So when you read this in the King James, the old King James text, you know that the word for donkeys is the word, the A word. We're a family church. We're not going to say it right. It's the, and so it just was kind of amusing to me that when I read that, it said that Saul was out looking for his father's. Very seventh grade boy of me, okay? Maybe just, I should go share that with the middle school boys group. I should go share that with them, right? But when he does, he goes out. Saul's out looking for his father's donkeys. And what he does, he runs into Samuel. And he has no idea this is going to happen. And Samuel sits him down and he feeds him a meal at this banquet. And then he anoints him privately to be the first king of Israel. Saul doesn't know it's going to happen. He doesn't even know if he wants it. So he goes home and he doesn't tell anybody. He doesn't tell his dad. He doesn't tell his mom. He doesn't share it with anybody. But when it's time to go public with this announcement, with the inauguration, if you can imagine, of a country's first king, and it's time for Saul to step up into his kingship. 1 Samuel chapter 10 says, so they inquired of the Lord again, is there a man still to come? And the Lord said, behold, he has hidden himself among the baggage. So if you can imagine, think about when President Trump or President Obama were elected and it's their big inauguration moment. It's time for them to step up and give the speech and they're not there. And everybody's like, where's the king? Where's the king to be? Where's the next leader? He's hiding in the Samsonite, right? He's under the bed with the luggage over there. And what you realize about Saul when you first meet him, is he's kind of got this endearing humility about him. You're kind of like, yeah, he's really cool. Like, he doesn't know if he wants to be the king. He doesn't want to be the king. And he thinks it's too big for him. But over time, if you've read anything about Saul's life, what you learn is that Saul becomes an egomaniacal leader. He has these violent mood swings. He becomes homicidal and trying to kill David. And he kills other people who get in his path, anyone who's a threat to him. And what he does is he begins to live in self-deception. And I want to just define that for us, okay? Self-deception is the human heart's ability to hide the truth from itself. That's what self-deception means. It's your ability, my ability, certainly we're going to see Saul's ability to hide reality in unreality. So by the time you get over to 1 Samuel chapter 15, Israel's going to war. Amalek, this country, is going to attack Israel. God speaks to Saul through the prophet Samuel, and God says, here's what's going to happen, Saul. You guys are going to fight, and there's going to be a war. And when you have this war, you're going to win. And when you win, you don't keep any spoils of war. And in their world, when there wasn't a significant monetary system, the spoils of war were their possessions, the cattle, the sheep. You don't bring their people back as slaves. Basically, you don't keep their king alive and bring him to try and get the allegiance of other nations around you. No, you're gonna wipe out all the cattle, all the sheep. You're gonna get rid of them. And you're kind of like, well, man, that makes it seem so harsh. But I want you to think about it. Most wars are fought and have been fought throughout history with an imperialistic sense. The reason in Israel's day that wars were fought was because if I win the war, I get your people as my slaves and my servants. I get all your possessions become my possessions. So I get wealthier. I get more people. I get the attention of the world. If I have your king as one of in my dungeon. And God says to Saul, we're not going to be a country like that. We're not going to be imperialistic. We're not going to take other countries' people as our slaves and subjects. We're not going to do that. And yet, Saul goes out. He has this war with Amalek. When he does, he brings back all the cattle. He brings back all the sheep. And he brings back their king alive. And what you realize is that Saul is walking around in this unreality, in this idea that he can just kind of make it up as he goes. And so he, on his way back, he sees Samuel. Samuel, God orchestrates the circumstances, so Samuel sees Saul, and Saul says to Samuel, blessed be the Lord, or blessed be you to the Lord. I have performed the commandment of the Lord. And Samuel said, well, what then is the bleating of sheep in my ears? And the lowing of oxen that I hear. So Saul and Samuel meet on the way back from the war. And Samuel, the national prophet, says to Saul, he says, hey, and Saul says, hey, I did exactly what God asked me to do. I listened, I obeyed. And in the Hebrew world, there's no difference between those two words. There's not a word that in Hebrew maybe that we would use like the word obey. It's the same word as the word to listen to. So to listen to means to obey. And Saul says, I listened to the word. I performed what God said. But what you realize is that he totally didn't. That he's living in unreality. So there's this way that Saul can live, that you can live, that I can live, where you can know and not know at the same time. Does that make sense? You're looking at me like, I don't know what you mean. Let me give you an example. A few years ago, that's probably been more than a few years ago, Angie and I had our first minivan, and I think it had about 175, 180,000 miles on it, and things were breaking on it all the time, and it was kind of one of those moments where you're like, what do? We trade it in? We don't really want to get something, an upgrade right now. We didn't really have the space in our lives for that, so we didn't know what to do with it. We just, you know, park it on the side of the road, take the tags off, and run as fast as we can, you know, to get away from this thing, or what do we do? We don't. And so we're riding in the van together one day, and Angie had already told me she had heard a noise, and the engine was making a noise. And so she's like, oh, there it is. Do you hear it? And I just reached down and just turned the radio up louder. Just turn the music. And she's like, wait a minute, don't you hear it? I'm like, yeah, I hear it. I just turned the radio up a little more. Well, I knew, but I didn't want to know. I just want to cover it up with some noise, or maybe let me ratchet up the six. Let's say there's a mom and a dad, and they've got a daughter, and she's very gifted at gymnastics. And so they take their daughter, and she works really hard, and she has practice every day. But because of that, she doesn't give much time and much attention to studying and grades and her academic life. And so because of that, she starts a pattern of habitually cheating. And eventually, she gets caught cheating at school. And the administration has outlined the disciplinary process, and the mom just goes in and she just blows up at the administration, and she tells them everything that they're doing wrong, and the reason that her daughter's not cheating, it's just the other girls are jealous of her daughter. The other girls, you know, don't like her daughter. The other kids don't. And the administration's out, and so they move her daughter to another school system, and it's not long when they move her daughter to the other school system, the same thing happens again, and she gets caught for cheating again. And this time the parents go in and they blow up at the teachers, and it's the teacher's fault, and they're not doing this right, and they're not doing that right, and this right. And so they move her to another school. What's going on? It's self-deception. They know, but they don't want to know. I'll ratchet it up one more for you. You know, when the Allies, whenever they liberated Europe and moved into Germany, the first city that they came through that was liberated was the little city of Ohrdruf. It had a concentration camp outside of this little city. And when the Allied soldiers got there, they found the corpses of a little over 2,000 people. Jewish people, prisoners of war, people who had been murdered and mutilated in the concentration camp. And the Nazi soldiers were trying as hard as they could to incinerate them, to get rid of the evidence as fast as they could, because they knew the Allied troops were coming, but they couldn't do it. They couldn't complete the task. And so when they interviewed the folks who were still left in the concentration camp, the prisoners of war and the others who were being held there, what they learned is that the German soldiers from that concentration camp, they would go into the little town of Ohrdruf and they would regularly drink and womanize and do all those kinds of things. So there was a connection between the city and the concentration camp. Well, 48 hours after liberation, Patton shows up. And as soon as he walks in, he looks around, he threw up. He vomited because of what he saw. And so he sent the Allied soldiers out to the town of Ohrdruf, and he gathered up all the townspeople and he brought them all out to the concentration camp. And the people were horrified. They said, we didn't know. We had no idea. We didn't know. So you know what Patton did? He had the townspeople of Ohrdruf dig 2,000 graves to bury the remains of all of the people who were left. And after the first day of digging, the mayor of Ohrdruf and his wife, that evening after they went home, they hung themselves. They committed suicide. And they left a note. And on the note, it said, "We didn't know, but we knew." And there's this capacity inside of your heart and my heart to live in self-deception, to know reality, but to just turn the radio up, man, just to live in the noise and live as fast as we can because we know, but we don't really want to know. Self-deception is not the worst thing that we do, but it's the reason we do the worst things that we do. Saul says to Samuel, "I have obeyed, I have performed the commandment of the Lord." And Samuel says back to him, "Really? Then why do I hear sheep? Why do I hear cattle?" And God was using Samuel in Saul's life to bring him to a sense of reality. As a matter of fact, listen to what Samuel says next to Saul. And Samuel said, "Though you are little in your own eyes," just remember that. "Though you are little in your own eyes, are you not the head of the tribes of Israel? The Lord anointed you king over Israel." And Saul said to Samuel, "I have obeyed the voice of the Lord. I have gone on the mission which the Lord sent to me. I have brought back Agag, the king of Amalek. I have devoted the Amalekites to destruction. But the people took of the spoil and the sheep and the oxen and the best of things devoted to destruction to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal." And Samuel said, "Has the Lord great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than to sacrifice, and to listen than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of divination, and presumption is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king." Saul's response, and this is the response for all of us when somebody kind of calls us onto the carpet, when we're kind of living in unreality and we're kind of self-deceived, Saul's response was real simple. It was two things: blame shifting and morality. Saul says, "Well, it wasn't me. It was the people who brought back the cattle, and it was the people, the soldiers brought back the sheep. I didn't want them to do it. It was them." We just blame shift to somebody else. And then we put a moral spin on it, right? I love what Saul says. He's like, "Well, we brought them back because we're going to have this big sacrifice at Gilgal. Here's what we're going to do. We brought back the sheep and the oxen because we're going to have this big church service." And we do the same thing. We put a spiritual spin on things in our lives so many times. Whenever we planted Life Point, there was a young couple who came, and they had a young son that was, at that time, I think he was about 3 years old, and they were transitioning him from the toddler bed to the big boy bed, right, upstairs. And every night, they would go up, and they'd put him to bed, and then he would call him back up, and they'd go back, and then they'd leave, and he'd call him back up, and he'd go back, and then he'd leave, just trying to get him to stay in his bed. So one night, they'd been up and down three times already, And finally, they go in, they pray with him, they put him down in his bed, and they head down the stairs. And he had this cute little accent. As they're heading downstairs, he said, "Mommy, Daddy, I need to tell you something." And they're like, "No, Jack, you don't. You just stay in your bed. We've already talked. We've talked three times. We've been back up there." And he said, "It's about Jesus." He knew what would get him back upstairs, right? And our parents are like, "Doggone it, you know, now we got to go because it's about Jesus." And there's so many times in our lives that I think we do that. There are things going on in our lives, things that we know aren't right, things that we know aren't best, but we'll just put a spiritual spin on it. We'll say, "Well, God told me," or "I'm supposed to because of blah, blah, blah." And we'll make it the way that we really just, really the way that we just want to make it. Let's say, I'll give you an example. Let's say you're here today and maybe you're cheating at business. And God sends you somebody who's a truth teller in your life who calls it to your attention. And your response is, "Well, I'm cheating. I'm cutting the corners a little bit, but I'm not like the guys at Enron who stole millions and millions of dollars from people." Well, what did the guys at Enron say? "Well, we know we're stealing millions and millions of dollars from people, but I mean, we're not killing people. We're not like the mafia or anything like that." What did the mafia say? "Well, we know we're killing people. We're only killing the people who deserve it. I mean, I'm good to my mudda, right? We're only killing the people who deserve to be killed." They're gonna say, "We're not like Hitler." What did Hitler say? I have no idea what Hitler said, but I'm sure he had an excuse, right? Because that's what we do. We shift the blame. We make it sound moral. We give it a cause for the unreality that we end up living in. So what's the answer? What's the answer for the heart level kinds of healing that we need? What do we see in John the Baptist that we don't see in Saul? And I'll just give you two things real quick. The first one is that we've got to learn to listen in the right direction. You got to listen in the right direction. Everybody needs a Samuel or Samuels in your life. This is why life groups or being a part of a small group, Bible study or biblical community is so absolutely critical to your growth. Because we can't see it. It's the nature of self-deception. We can't see it, so we need a truth teller in our lives, or truth tellers. And I would just say, if you're here today and you're not part of a small group community of people who can look into your life, or you can look into somebody else's life, and maybe you can help them and speak truth in the context of love in their life, and we'd love to help you get into a group. There's a connection card on the back of your listening guide. If you'll just put your name there and you'll put a way that we can contact you and check the bar there for life groups, drop that in one of the black boxes today before you leave. We'll reach out to you and we'll do everything that we can to help you get connected in the context of a group, because it's just all of us. Why do you think that Saul, who had everything that he needed, brought back the cattle and the sheep? Because he wasn't content. He wasn't content just to be wealthy. He wanted to be the wealthiest king in that part of the world. Why did he bring back the Amalekite king Agag alive? Why did he bring him back with him? Because Saul didn't just want to be a king. He wanted to be the king of kings. So what you and I have got to do is we've got to fight the Saul tendency in our lives, because it's just as real as for us as it is for him. It's the reason. It's the reason that in the middle of crisis, in the middle when you start to see things as real, you overshop, or you overeat, or you look at pornography and graphic images on the internet. It's the reason that you rage out at somebody and your anger just boils over. And listen, it's self-deception. And when it gets pointed out to us, we have to find a way to cope. So what do we need to do? We need to listen, and we need to listen in the right direction. The reality is, you're gonna listen to somebody. And not only listening in the right direction, but the second thing is running in the right direction. And not only are you gonna listen to somebody, you're gonna run one way or the other way, spiritually speaking. I'll give you an example. Whenever we talk about staff job descriptions around here at LifePoint, we talk about them in the context of three things. First of all, we talk about character. Secondly, we talk about chemistry. And by chemistry, I mean how you act and interact with other people. And then the last one we talk about is competency. In other words, your gifts, talents, and abilities to do the things that that are necessary. Character, chemistry, competency. We talk about them in that order. We say this is number one. If you don't have a sense of character, if you don't have a sense of integrity about the way that you live, if you're not living out biblical principles and spiritual fruit, then there's just not a place. There's not a spot for you. The second one, obviously, like I said, is chemistry. How do you interact with others? How do you perceive the others on your team? How do they perceive you? And then in the broader context of what we're trying to do, how do you act and interact with others? And then the last one is competency. Those are your gifts, talents, and abilities. And what we think and believe and we think is accurate and true is that if we find somebody who's got godly character, who's pursuing him personally, and that's obvious to not only see it from them, but other people speak that, see that in their lives. They have healthy relational interactions with other people, and they believe the best about others. Others believe the best, right, about them. Then if they have a sense of calling, we can help them with competency. We can help them learn. We can get them training. We can find them conferences to go to increase in this area if there is a sense of calling there. Character, chemistry, and competency. And we take them in that order. Character's first, chemistry second, and competency's third. The reason I said all that to say to you, I said all that to say this, is that what I know is true of us is that tomorrow morning, right, it's Monday morning after Thanksgiving week, it's not like the work goes away while you're not there. It's piled up, it's piled up, it's piled up, and you've seen it on your phone. You've logged into your computer. You know what's there. You know what's waiting on you. And so Monday morning, you're going to put it off as long as you can. You're going to hit snooze, and you're going to hit snooze, and you're going to hit snooze, and you're going to put it off. And so what you're going to do is you're going to get up as late as you can. Instead of carving out time, maybe to spend in investing God's word in your life, in your heart, instead of carving out time to pray, say, you know what, God, I'm going to give not only today to you, but I'm going to give this week to you. What's going to happen? You're going to put it off. You're going to get up late. And what that means is you're going to run immediately to your talents, gifts, and abilities. And you're going to rely on your talents, gifts, and abilities. You're going to rely on your ability to make the sale. You're going to rely on your ability to bring the meeting together. You're going to rely on your ability, your sense of how you can make it work, your gifts, to make things happen and project manage and do all the things that you do. And at the end of the day, you're going to be tired, you're going to be worn out. And if you can squeeze in a little bit of time for chemistry, maybe you'll squeeze in a little bit of chemistry time for the family or something like that if you can. What does that mean? That means consistently in our lives, what gets left out is self-reflection and the investment of the time and energy in our hearts to live out spiritual fruits in the context of biblical character. What happens to you and me is that we run the bases backwards. We run to third base first, and we don't ever get over to character. But what Jesus says to us is that we don't have to live in self-deception. John the Baptist is an incredible example of that. John the Baptist lived in reality. He wore weird clothes. He kind of lived a weird lifestyle, but he didn't care. That was not the most important thing to him because he lived by the principle what Jesus taught, you shall know the truth and the truth shall set you free. He lived in freedom.